Every person who doesn't play video games feels when they hear people talk about video games.
Yeah, but do you realize Cookie Clicker is like an extreme example of absurdity?
You can't. I'm just saying, this is exactly what people think when you explain.
Like, I just got
the new rifle by upgrading my level, and in Terra, I just got a plus 22.
Well, if you're talking about Terra, not if you're talking about like FIFA, like, oh, I just scored a goal. People get that.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, I got all my grandmas in the grandma factory making my cookies.
Oh. In FIFA, my guy flipped.
Hey, welcome to the Unwired, where we talk all things tech and video game and cookie clicker, apparently.
And grandmas.
My name is Rob Steller, and I'm your favorite Windows fanboy.
And I'm Josiah Hills.
And I'm Sean Thomas.
Can I just point out before we start that I think it's awesome I can end whatever argument we're in by just starting the show at whatever point I want. We were running for like, 20 seconds before that came on.
And what's awesome is that I can continue that argument. So we're going to start off the day by talking about this new app.
We're not talking about it. We're not talking about it.
So
move on.
Basically, cookies. Okay. Cookie clicker, though, for real. Let's see. This week was kind of a slow news week. A few things. So I guess we'll start out by talking about Steam hardware. So as you know, last week they released, Valve announced three different things about the Steam Box, Steam OS, and the controller. They just put out specs for the prototype box. Now, should say it's the prototype box. This is not final hardware, and so we don't know if this is what they're going to use or what platform, but there are a couple different hardware setups they have. But basically, you're looking at anywhere from an i3 to an i7 processor, coupled with, on the low end, a GeForce 660, to on the very high end, they're including a GeForce Titan, which is over 10. So they're going pretty high end. If you don't know, a GeForce 660 is, how do I put this? The lowest high-end card that NVIDIA makes. So even at the low end, you're starting with the best range of cards that you can get. And the 6 series is pretty much the newest series. They have the 7 series, but I think the 7 series is out, but that's pretty much the 6 series, like overclocked or something like that. So what do you guys think? These are pretty high-end specs.
I kind of wish I could put my hat in the ring just for the chance I might get a Titan on my doorstep.
Yeah, why can't you, though?
Because you have to fill out, you have to like do all these things in order to get it.
It's relatively simple. It's like get 10 friends, post to the
forums. Well, unfortunately, that's the hardest one for me, considering both of my friends are in this chat right now.
Wow.
Wait, what do we have to do? I mean, we're both on Steam, so.
Yeah, we need 10 of us, though.
You need a total of 10, and it's not like 10 new friends. It's already counting, people that you have, so.
They probably think we're the popular kids in high school, 10 friends.
No, it's pretty interesting that they're trying out a whole range of different setups. Something very unorthodox, obviously, we're not used to seeing. I mean, traditionally, they just kind of give us whatever specs that they decide. So,
well, unorthodox for a PC, for a console.
For a console.
Well, I think they're really, they're trying to get the community involved, not with just a hype cycle, but with like a participation cycle, and they're trying to get people to say, yeah, this feels right, and then they're going to price it out, and because I don't think it's very realistic that they're going to sell a bunch of these with the Titan,
said,
that's kind of overkill, and the price is just going to be out of most people's range.
Titan alone is what, a grand, right? So you're talking about that plus an i7, so you're talking about almost $2,000 right there. Not including everything else. So it's kind of.
But, I think they're just trying to put out what it could be and get people a feel and then have a lot of stats and say to other third-party developers, hey, this is what, this is the feedback that we got and these are the performance specs that we got when we played these games on SteamOS, that sort of thing, just so they can get that that kind of back-end information to their third-party partners, I think. And I think it's smart. And the dimensions, is basically, what, a foot-by-foot box that's about 3 inches high, roughly. Mm-hmm. So I think that's definitely going to change because the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4 are tiny, right? Like, when I saw them actually next to the old Xbox 360 and the old PlayStation, I was like, whoa, that's a lot smaller than it looks when you just see the box by itself. But so I think those new boxes, those new consoles are smaller than the dimensions of this prototype. And that the piston that they announced, I mean, that thing is tiny, right? So I would be surprised if it stayed, if the other Steam boxes stayed that large.
I mean, maybe they already said this, but is it that far-fetched that they would come out with two or three versions, like, you know, a low, medium, and high-end, just for people to get different settings on it?
No, I think that's dead on, Rob. I think they probably will do that. And then also, like Sean was saying last week, keep it expandable. Because, I mean, so with that said, actually, maybe they would keep the slightly larger box size. I don't know.
So I think it'll be difficult to avoid. I actually think it's a pretty small package. I don't think they'll go smaller because, as you said, it has to be upgradable.
Yeah, yeah.
One difference that the PS4 and the Xbox One have is that they're using graphics cards that are on board. It's built in graphics cards. So it's not, and so, you know, you can't replace the motherboard. That's not upgradable. So if you are using separate PCI cards like they sound like they're doing now, I think it might be difficult to have a significantly smaller device because you still have to have that. I'm surprised they even got it a foot by a foot because I don't know what the exact spec is, but that's clearly much smaller than a full ATX case. And I'd say even, I think that's, is that smaller than mini ATX? I always forget which one it
is. I think the height is the thing that actually surprises me, right? Because some of those graphics cards are very tall.
Yeah.
So maybe they're putting it in at an angle or something like that.
Yeah, they must have special motherboards at least.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to find a Titan, a half-height, 10-height Titan. they don't exist. So, they're definitely, but either way, I don't think the size is horrible.
I don't think it's too big, and especially thinking about upgrading, it's actually probably kind of tight in there. So, no, you're right. You're right.
And I think, I could be wrong, but I feel like the piston is out the window. I mean, I guess third-party publishers can do whatever they want, third-party hardware manufacturers can do whatever they want. So I guess that's still totally doable, but I can't imagine anything but an ARM system in something that compact. Like, I don't know. I don't know enough about hardware. But one thing that worries me a little bit, and I know they went third-party hardware route, so this is inevitability, but I feel like by limiting the amount of the choice you have, you can streamline production and reduce cost. I mean, the Xbox at this point, they just have one system. Also, if it breaks, they only have to deal with one system like this. There's some advantages to having one product. So I wonder if they have too many configurations, how that may or may not lead to other issues down the road. The one big problem with PCs is that there's so many different configurations. You know, support becomes difficult.
I think they're still relying on the majority of the boxes sold will probably be third-party creations, and they will probably have one to three boxes that they sell themselves and maybe do some speccing. But I think their profits, you know, they're probably hoping to make some money off of that, but probably more so just don't lose money. Like, because even Xbox and Xbone and PS4, it's almost a lock that they're going to lose money the first year to 3 years. I mean, that's the typical console product cycle, is that you lose money the first few years every time you sell a box, but you're making it back on licensing fees and software sales. So they're probably going to say, hey, let's just not lose any money when we sell these, because we'll do them in fairly limited product runs, but it's going to be a higher cost to the consumer, but they'll feel like that's okay because they're getting a really high-spec machine to their specifications, and then they're still going to make money off of their game sales. I still see this as a vehicle to sell stuff on Steam.
That makes sense. I mean, definitely going the Amazon route makes
that's
sense. Using that, especially because I would assume they get they might get a bigger cut from Steam than they do than Microsoft and Sony get from. I don't know what the percentages are, but I don't want to say that. but they at least have more control of the distribution.
Right.
But so yeah, I mean, you're right. Actually, that could make sense if they just make sure they at minimum break even. What was I just gonna say? I forgot. Games. Yeah, games are gonna be pretty important. Okay, I remember what I was gonna say, but I was gonna mention something.
All right. Well, moving on to GTA. Maybe it'll come back to you.
Yeah.
All right, Rob. You've been on GTA
on SteamOS.
What's that?
So
I think I touched on this. I think it was released last Wednesday, and I talked about it a little bit on Thursday last week, and pretty much everyone had a terrible experience. People pretty much couldn't get on. I think it took me 3 or 4 tries just to get into the game, then it kept freezing and kicking me out and losing the server. So it works. They patched it twice, I think, since then to fix a couple different things. So it works pretty well. So I think I had mentioned also my fear of this game, and it happened where I would finish a mission with somebody, and as soon as we came out, he would just turn around and shoot me in the face and take all the money that we paid. And this happened like 3 or 4 times, and it became pretty frustrating, so I just rage quitted. And then I didn't play it for a few days, and then a couple days I started playing it again. And they have a passive mode, which essentially is like a safe mode where other people can't kill you on the map, which is very smart. So I have that on now, and now people can't kill me between missions. And it's funny because the first time I had it on, the same thing happened where we finished a mission. This guy turned around. He killed the guy next to me, and I actually happened to be standing next to that guy, so I took the money. I took the money that he dropped. And then the guy turns and starts shooting at me, and the bullets just fly through me because I have this passive mode on. He like stops, and he looks at me. He's all confused, and then he shoots me again, and he's like, "I don't know what's happening." So then he just ran away. So
now you say you're a hacker. He's like, stop hacking the game, man.
People think I'm God now. And
nice.
No, but it's much better. So that's not as bad, because that's ruined other games for me.
Yeah, actually, hopefully people take a lesson from that. I mean, even if they don't turn on passive mode, it starts to get into like game theory, right? Like,
right.
So does my accomplice have passive mode, and then if I kill somebody else, he could take the money, and I could lose out, and so it just gets into this psychological.
I will say I do wish that I knew people who played this game. I want to experience the cruise aspect of it.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to do that yet because I don't have friends. And also I don't make friends very easily in games, apparently. So I haven't been able to do that, but it would be nice to have a set group of people that you can just continually do missions with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just been random people, but it's pretty good. I mean, missions are somewhat there's some variety to it. So
I think the whole game,
it takes forever to earn money though. Like I played it at least 4 hours. I think I have maybe $25,000, which is nothing.
How do you make that money? Like robbing stuff or
just doing different jobs and missions?
You should invest in what's the stock, BallSack or something?
BossDack or something, yeah, something like that.
Pretty sure it's yeah.
It's actually down. You can't do it on the online part of it, and I think it's because people tried to game it, so they're trying to figure out how to prevent that.
See, these are all the funny things. I think the whole griefing issue. I mean, a lot of MMOs resolved it by essentially making PvP not possible unless like they make a lot of games make PvP very strict. And they'll say, you can't just randomly attack somebody. You have to be in certain areas, unless you join a server that does that. But I can imagine that when Rockstar was making this game, especially considering this is their first truly online game, right? I think they want to balance this realism with these game mechanics. Like, I'm sure there's, to some part, they're almost thinking Eve kind of fashion, where they're like, we want it to be possible where that leader of your gang can just kill you and take your money, because that's how it happens in the real world. But I guess they didn't anticipate that this would just happen constantly. And
that's been your experience in the real world.
Yes, all eyes open. But you know what I mean. Like I assume they did that because it's really not like It's not like it just, you know, oh, everybody's happy, and a lot of criminal organizations, they cannibalize themselves. Like, I mean, how does anyone get to the top of a criminal organization? They kill the last guy who's at the top of the criminal organization. So, like, in EVE, this happens all the time, and there's different factions and stuff like that. I don't know. I assume they wanted to cultivate that kind of atmosphere, but I don't know if they realized that it was just going to turn into, hey, you're dead all the time.
So, I mean, we'll see how it continues to progress, but I know that they're planning on, they haven't put in heists yet into the multiplayer side of it, and I know they're looking to do that, and that was one of the biggest pros.
I feel like, Rockstar.
Well, it's, I mean, they're adding it as they go along. I mean,
I know, but I thought heists would be the thing that you would do, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean,
like, if Skyrim didn't have dragons, of course it doesn't have multiplayer. But...
Well, they do now.
They do?
You can ride dragons. What are you talking about?
No, multiplayer.
Multiplayer.
Did you ever try it, though? I don't even know how you do it. And it, no, the one time I rode a dragon, because you have to in the for the mission. Oh, yeah, you never even played it, did you? I thought you were a huge fan of Elder Scrolls, man.
Played what?
Elder Scrolls Skyrim.
You saying I never played Skyrim?
No, the expansion where you
get... Dragonborn, I didn't play, no.
That's the one where you ride a dragon.
Yes, I haven't played it, Sean. Thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, would not be a good thing. I don't know. It was really bad. Like, it sounds cool, and then the controls. I actually, like, so as a tutorial, so you learn how to ride a dragon in the final mission of the entire thing, and it's on the way to fight the final boss. You get it's like, it's pretty useless to start with, and then the tutorial is you can, like, shoot a bunch of guys on an island before you get to the final boss. And I literally didn't know how to do any of it because they didn't do the tutorial well, so I literally killed none of the guys on the island. And my dragon just flew to the final boss, and then I murdered him. So I did my whoosh back with, like, the attacks. That's a hilarious game. Anyway, Skyrim!
You Fustorod him? Fustorod?
You know what's funny? I pretty much, in that game, I never use shouts, except when I had to.
Yeah,
like,
I never use them.
I never use shouts.
Yeah. They're frustrating, I think. Not as powerful as you'd hope.
Yeah. All right.
Enough about that.
Enough.
Let's talk the iPhone.
Okay.
So,
iPhone.
this is pretty interesting for me. So I have borrowed Josiah's phone.
Day 24.
Rather, I snatched him. I snatched the iPhone from him after he upgraded. So I've been using the 4S for the past week now, I think, right? It's been 7 days.
Yep.
So I have some things that I'd like to point out, being somebody who's been a Windows phone user since mobile 6.5. what do you want to start with, the pros or the cons?
Let's start with the cons.
Are you sure? There's a longer list.
Yeah. Let's get them out there. I got some cons myself, mostly with iOS 7, but yeah.
Okay, so I will say
just start with the cons. Just go.
All right, fine.
We already know. Honestly, you're from not to be offensive, but you're in a position where, like, Windows is down. So I think it makes more sense. Like, most people know what they like about the iPhone.
Okay, so the keyboard is, like, the most god-awful monstrosity I've ever used to type something. I don't know if maybe it's just the phone is too narrow. Like, the screen is so freaking narrow, and it's just small in general. Like, my phone would literally eat it.
I think there's a lot of muscle memory that goes with that, because, when I was using that Samsung, when I was using the Galaxy, like, it was crazy on my hands to, like, type on that keyboard. And, you know, you think about it, it's like, each key is maybe a couple millimeters spaced out more, but it just totally ruined my typing speed.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Say that also because I don't know anyone who thinks the iPhone keyboard is bad. I'll be honest. I mean, maybe I just don't know the right people, but every person I know is happy. And actually, funny for me, I like Windows Phone keyboard and the iPhone keyboard. Well, and I don't own either, but, well, I have.
I will say that the layout is not that great. Like, I wish they had, especially on the iPhone 5 and 5S, now that they have the longer screen, I wish they had added another row to the regular keyboard. I'll say, Sean, I think people typically think the keyboard's pretty good because the touchscreen is so responsive. But I don't really like the layout.
See, It's funny you say that, because I actually constantly miss keys. Like, I'll go to type the, and I'll just miss T altogether.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot. And also, along with this, the autocorrect for iPhone, maybe it's because I haven't used it long enough, but it's like it never knows what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because I am terrible at spelling. But I just want to put it out there.
I've been misspelling it wrong on the Windows Phone all this time.
Yeah, but you know what, though? You know what, though? I'll misspell things, and Windows Phone knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And iPhone does not.
No, I think that's definitely a training thing, because I do it all the time too, and like it's just second nature that I don't even now I rarely check my autocorrect. It's just like it just works pretty well most of the time.
I sent five text messages in a row to Sean to just spell one word out.
Oh, that was awesome.
That's happened like a half dozen times already, and it's just like it's so frustrating for me to just have to keep sending it.
Well, but I mean, the thing is, it doesn't learn unless you correct it, right? Like you have to spell the word out wrong, and then it has the underline, and then you tap it, and then you correct it. So then it starts to learn from your correction of the autocorrect. But if you're just sending it. And then resending it, it won't learn.
My sister had a 3GS, and I gave her my Lumia 800. Granted, the Lumia 800 is, I guess, smaller, and it's Windows Phone 7. I love the keyboard on Windows Phone 7. She hated it. She couldn't. She always said she had trouble with it. I don't understand how people have. Well, granted, I actually don't like the Android keyboard that much. But I don't know. I always thought both the iPhone keyboard and the Windows Phone keyboard were great.
So Rob, check out Chrome. Download Chrome browser on the iPhone.
Okay.
And when you type in into the address bar, you'll see that they actually use a custom keyboard in the app, and it just has one extra row on it, but it makes things much easier versus how the iPhone keyboard is set up, especially for typing in obviously web addresses. So you know, it just shows that it could be better.
Also, interesting thing, I'm sure it doesn't affect autocorrect or actual typing, but isn't it true that apps that haven't updated to iOS 7 still use the iOS 6 keyboard?
Yeah, it's weird.
Funny, because I thought it would just be a universal thing, but I assume, though, it doesn't feel any different, right? Like, it just looks different? For the most part.
For the most part, it's pretty familiar. Like, when I switched to iOS 7, I didn't feel like, oh, I got to relearn how to type. Yeah, it's mostly.
Okay, the other things I've noticed, and people have had varying experiences, so this is just mine, but I find it iOS 7, and, well, I'll find my iOS experience that a lot of the apps that I use, especially like Facebook, Twitter, some of these other ones, are just so slow. So incredibly slow. I mean, it takes forever to launch it, and then even within it
going through. Do it now. Can we see it? How long does it take?
All right.
That's crazy, because I think we should point out it's iPhone 4S.
I opened Facebook.
4S is two generations, which really it's not. Even though
I got it. That's how long that took. That was like full 5 seconds. That's ridiculous. That's too long. That's too long.
Specifically Facebook. I don't know about Twitter, but a lot of people complain about the Facebook app just being slow.
And I find this across the board, though, with different apps. Although I will say, in a plus side, though, the apps that are on both phones, the apps on iOS, hands down, are usually a lot better. I mean, they have more features into it. I mean, clearly spend more time designing it.
Yeah.
It looks a lot nicer, so.
Yeah, like YouTube.
I don't know. Yes. So can I point out one other thing, too, and this is on the hardware side, is that I really missed having a back button when I started using this phone. Yep. And it's interesting because it's not something I really thought about, because all the phones I've had for a while have had a back button, and it's just how I jump around inside of an app.
Yeah.
So like if I'm on a website and go back, I'll just hit the back button instead of having to go up to the menu and select back.
Yep.
So the first few days of using the iPhone, I just closed out of everything. I would hit the home button every time I would go back, and it would just close out. So that just constantly happened. Those are the main cons that I've had. Oh, the maps, I hate. Oh my God, people make fun of Bing Maps, right? But at least it knows where I am and doesn't tell me to turn four streets later. Like the maps.
Oh, really?
The Maps app on the iPhone is so slow that like I will be driving and I will be pretty much past the intersection when it's telling me to turn.
Hmm.
Okay. Which is not
good.
Did
Google Maps work that better?
I've had problems with both. I haven't used either one a whole bunch recently because that Waze is my my mainstay. So I was kind of not disappointed, but just a little heart palpitations when I heard that Google bought them instead of Apple bought them. Because Google Maps, you know, people like Google Maps. It's pretty good to begin with. So I was really hoping that Apple would buy Waze and just kind of boost their offering, just so you know, keep Apple Maps versus Google Maps kind of competitive. Because you know, I actually like the competition in the mobile devices area and mobile software area right now because it's just healthy competition. It makes everybody try a little bit harder. Even though obviously I have a favorite in Apple, but you know, I do want other things to be competitive to it. So let me throw in my cons. Because, you know, like I said, using iOS 7 on the 5S, I feel like there's, in the notification centers, they added that Today panel that didn't always used to be, that wasn't there in iOS 6. Mm-hmm. And I really like the idea, but I think the execution is pretty terrible.
Yeah.
It's too much text. Like the idea of the Today panel is just to get a quick overview of your day. So, you know, it tells you cloudy, current, it tells you the weather, but it tells you that in text. Like, just show me an icon. And it used to have a quick link to open up the weather app, and I never used it. I only used it by accident. Like, it was kind of scrunched up in the place where you would close out notifications, delete notifications, so sometimes I'd hit that. And it was gosh awful ugly because it was the old Yahoo Weather app, and then or it was based on the old Yahoo Weather app. And when Yahoo Weather updated their app, it was still like the old Yahoo app in iOS 6. So I was kind of excited, like because the new, and I know it sounds silly, but the new iOS 7 weather app is actually quite nice. It's really graphically laid out pretty well. And but there's no button to go to the weather app. Like if I click the weather in the Today panel, it doesn't. I don't think it takes me to weather. Let's see.
Yeah, it does.
It does?
Yeah.
Huh. It does.
I know this, and I've had the phone for a week.
I must have. Okay.
I think it would be nice if you had, so like the calendar only shows
you... Well,
that's
the thing,
you...
there's no buttons, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, okay, so that's one big, you don't even know it's there, right?
It's just all
the
text.
The other thing I would say, so, oh, actually, finish with your cons, because I...
So the other thing is, it shows you like a calendar, and the calendar, I think, again, the proportions are way off, because it takes up a lot of space, but it doesn't show you a lot of information.
See, right, I would have liked if you could, you should be able to scroll through the calendar.
Right. Like it just shows you like the next 4 hours or something like that.
Wait, how do you do it now? Do you hit like is there a button for next month?
Like from that notification window, you can't scroll through the calendar. It just shows you the next 4 hours. And if you've got nothing coming up the next 4 hours, it looks like your calendar is empty.
Yeah.
But you know, if you've got something in 5 hours and you've got something in 6 hours, it's like, no, your calendar's empty. I mean, that's what it looks like. So it's just not that useful. It's a lot of empty space.
You should be able to scroll through the calendar on that.
Yeah, I think they should have, you know, change the font size on some of this stuff because the actual calendar appointments, the font size is really, really tiny, and then you just have all this empty space showing that it takes an hour. You know, that appointment's going to take an hour, and you can barely read what the appointment says. So it's just the layout on that is really busted, in my opinion. Like I said, I love the concept, but I just think it's not useful at all right now. It's just a bunch of wasted space. So that's my major gripe. Then the other thing is that some apps are still really buggy in iOS 7. Like, I mean, some of these, since it launched, they've updated themselves like 4 or 5 times. That's not exaggeration. They like, and each time they said bug fixes and stability improvements, and some of them they're still crash. It's really bizarre. So a little disappointed with the, you know, I don't know exactly who to blame. That like maybe Apple released iOS 7 and it's not really good enough yet, or if the app developers just didn't prepare well enough. I don't know. But I'm sure it'll get sorted out soon enough because it's just a software thing. But one last gripe. It's a tiny thing. It's very subtle. And it's probably only, you know, people who've used an iPhone for a while. But the home button on the 5S feels different. And I'm assuming that's because they, you know, how they put in the fingerprint sensor. So I talked last show, I really love the fingerprint sensor, but the home button, when I click it, it feels different. And because, you know, that's the only, well, not the only, but that's the major functional physical button on the iPhone. You have to double tap that to go to the multitasking cards. And just because the way it feels, I sometimes stutter, like triple click it.
Isn't, you know, it less, it's hard. Shallow?
I think it's actually deeper. I don't know. It's but it just feels different. Whatever it is, it feels different. So I need to get used to that. Is Siri going to talk to us?
No, sorry.
Did you have your Siri like have a conversation? Hi, I'm the 5S.
So all right, let me go to some pros. So the one thing hands down, and this is probably going to be pretty obvious coming from a Windows person, but not the notification center itself, but the notifications that show up on the lock screen. So the way Windows Phone works is that you'll get notifications for one app on the lock screen. So it'll say, like, if your calendar, you know, it'll show your next appointment. If it's text messaging, it'll just show you the last text that you got, which is fine. But then when I saw iOS, how you can just scroll through all the different notifications that you missed,
mm-hmm.
I was just like, that blew me away. Like, that's like hands down. That, no, it's absolutely what it should be. And the only gripe that I have with it, though, is that you can't dismiss them without opening the phone.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You should be able to slide one way to just dismiss the notification and the other way to open it. Mm-hmm. Like, that would just make sense. But you can't, which makes no sense to me. I will say it's the notification center is kind of nice. I do say it. But they're, you know, the new Windows Phone 8.1 will have that. It'll be interesting to see what they do with the lock screen, though. If I kind of want to like hack together like a Frankenstein operating system. what else?
What do you both think about the way you get? I guess you could say the way you get notifications, because I've heard a lot of people complain about the way the notification will come at the top of your screen, like a little 3D box. I don't know how to explain it. Will like turn down, but I've heard the problem is it'll overlap your app, and sometimes it'll be difficult to press buttons or do whatever you want to do.
So if I'm texting, and this is a very small screen, so my keyboard's taking up half the screen already. And then a notification comes down, it's like more or less the entire screen.
Yeah.
Like there's not much left. That's kind of annoying.
It is annoying. It's not the end of the world. So it stays for, what, maybe a second and a half or something
like
that?
Yeah, you can push it up. You can push it up too.
Yeah, you kind of have to, you pull it down for a split second and then you push it back up. You can't just push it back up. You have to grab it down and push it up. Maybe they changed that in iOS 7. I haven't picked up on it yet. But
would it be better if they just pushed everything down? Like, I've heard it overlaps whatever you're doing.
Yeah.
If there's something up there, if you're reading something, whatever's up there, you can't. So
what does Android do?
Android always has that top bar up there anyway.
It'll
stay up there, so it never has that.
Huh. No, I like the animation that because it draws your eye to it and it mm-hmm. points out that, you know, this is happening. Because you can have push notifications without sound or vibration, right? So you could turn that off. And it's per app. I don't remember what it was like in Android, but you can get really specific. You can say this app Notify by Alert, which is where it puts that text box right in the middle of the screen.
Yeah.
So that, and that was the old style that a lot of people really hated before the drop down. But
yeah.
you can tell an app to do, so you can make certain apps do that. You can make you can say do the notification center. You can say show me keep the last five notifications in the notification center, or just keep the last one notification in notification center. You can say have sound, have no sound, have vibration, no vibration. That, so it's really I mean, if you want to get specific about what apps are sending you push notifications and how you manage that, you can. I don't like I said, I don't remember if Android lets you get that granular.
Yeah, you know, Chrome will give me one ring, my text message will give me 4.5, mail will give me your box.
And you can do that. You can do custom vibrations. Have you tried that, Rob?
No, I haven't done that.
You can actually tap it out. So if you want, whenever Sean sends you a text, you want it tap, 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 you can do that.
I want it to just go really fast.
Well, in Android, so I don't think it's stock Android. I don't know if it's CyanogenMod or not. Anyway, you can set vibration. It's really unintuitive, but you literally, it gives timers, and you say the length of vibration you want followed by the length of the pause. So yeah. You can literally do whatever you want. And I'm like, I literally got to that because I wanted it to be quieter. I was like, I don't know how long I want it to be. Like, how many in milliseconds? But I think it was an added feature. I don't think it's...
You should do that, like, have a whole song lyrics played out in, like, Morse code.
and you'll be the only one to laugh when you hear it. You'll be like, yeah, Katy Perry.
Other things that I liked. I liked Siri, although I'll be honest, I haven't used it that much. Only because probably I'm not used to using it. Mm-hmm. But the idea that you can just search, plus I would never use it in public anyway. But I like the idea that you can use it to set appointments. So I can say, you know, I have a meeting at this time, this place, and whatever, and it'll remind me. That's pretty cool. What else? Closing apps from the multitasking window is where you can just slide up, which is
WebOS.
WebOS,
I don't understand
exactly the cards view.
Phone didn't do that. It's like it's
it's kind of ridiculous.
It's like in the card position, or at least have an X.
I do it. I try to do it all the time.
So yeah, because you're like.
I also say like the phone itself, hardware is very good. I mean, it's very solid. It's much too small for my liking.
Mm-hmm.
I do like having a dedicated vibrate ringer switch on the side. That's actually really nice.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had a whole lot of time to play with any apps, really. So I've been using mostly stock apps. Mail, I don't really care for all that much. Calendar, I don't care for all that much.
Yeah, the calendar is kind of busted.
But I haven't explained
the other Google apps, because I feel like that's the first thing a lot of people do. But they may not like all.
Maybe that's what I'll try.
You should try Mailbox for mail.
Oh yeah. Actually, they have a lot of good mail.
The other thing, I'll admit, I didn't fully move everything over. Like, I don't have my work email on my iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I've been trying to use. So I have Xbox Music, and I subscribe to it. And there's an app for it, but you can't download to the phone. And I don't want to waste my data streaming it, even though apparently it doesn't take that much, but I think it does. So I've been carrying around both phones everywhere I go and using my Windows phone as basically an MP3 player.
Nice.
But I think it's weird that you can't download songs from Xbox Music to the phone.
I mean,
like that's
I don't
weird
think
to me. But
that's, it might be a licensing thing, but more than likely that's just a... Microsoft doesn't want to share all their features with
or they might not have
with iOS.
Yeah.
You know, which is a good I don't want to cut you off, but it's actually a good transition to
one more thing. I just want to point out, it's funny that you know how when you text somebody who has an iDevice that it turns up blue instead of green.
Yeah.
So everybody knows that I hate Windows, or I hate iPhones and everything, Apple devices. So I would text random people without telling them about this, and they'd be like, "Wait!" After like two text messages, be like, "Wait, why is it blue? Like, you're texting me from an iPhone," and they would freak out and they'd be like, "What's happening?
Oh my God, this is an iPhone!
This is the end of the world!
They're like, screenshot."
Actually, I want to ask you a question. I think I think you have a couple more weeks on your contract of using an iPhone, right? So we'll still
It's whatever Josiah snatches it back from me.
I like how this is your relationship is snatching. You guys actually rob each other constantly. Yeah. But honestly, I mean, it's definitely very difficult to gauge, but and it's difficult to say, especially because you don't like the keyboard, and I think keyboard's one of the most essential things of a phone, but mm-hmm. how do you think your productivity rates, like when you're using the phone, even for fun stuff?
I said this off the show before we started. It's interesting just because of how small the screen is. I actually avoid searching for things on the web altogether. Like I honestly have not used the internet on my phone, on the iPhone, basically at all. I mean, I will like actually go out of my way to wait to use a computer to look something up just because it's so freaking small. So I mean, like I said, I didn't move everything over just because I know I'm not going to have it for that long of a time. So I didn't move my work email over. I don't respond to emails on here at all just because I hate the keyboard and I don't want to type it out. So I haven't really used it as a productivity device.
You should, I mean, if obviously, like you said, not in public if you're not comfortable with it, but you can dictate. I mean, you can dictate. You use the little microphone button.
That's funny. My mom is actually telling me this, which is, you know, kind of ironic because she's had the device for basically the same amount of time as I have, and it's her, their first smartphone. So. Yeah, they both got a 4S, my parents, and it's funny because they didn't know FaceTime existed, and I did it with them, and they like started freaking out. They're like, "Oh my god, I can see you!" And I was like, "No, I actually transcended my body. I look at my phone now. I am technology."
technology.
So that was kind of fun.
Cool. My friend tried to FaceTime me, and I don't know what happened. I have an Android phone, and so she just hung up on me. Because I call it back, I'm like, what happened? She's like, oh, I tried to FaceTime you and it didn't work. Which I don't think that's how it works, but...
You can call somebody on FaceTime? Even though
I don't know.
Don't you just hit a button while you're talking to somebody? I don't know. She could just be dumb.
Oh, I don't know if it's just me, but like the calls aren't as clear on here as my Windows phone. I don't know if that's just like a weird thing that's happening, but... That was just something I noticed.
Yeah, it's the same network, so yeah, it might be the phone.
Oh, and I will say to anybody who's watching the show that I've texted and they've received multiple texts from me, it's not the Windows phone
we
discovered because Sean got multiple texts from the iPhone.
Yeah, which is crazy. I don't know what causes that. I mean, it must be AT&T.
Yeah, so that's mystery Mythbusters right there.
Huh.
Which is
but I mean, it must be just your account, right? Because, like...
Yeah, no one else has that.
And
I don't know.
It's weird.
Maybe it's the NSA. The NSA. It's funny. Side note, it has nothing to do with anything, but I thought it was kind of cool. When I was using a prototype N9, because my brother used to work for Nokia, I realized on our bill we had all these international text messages. Like, what the heck is this? And I looked, somehow I was able to trace the number, and it was a number of Finland. And since it's a prototype phone, it must have been calling home. But I had like 30 international text messages on our bill. All
right, just segue this.
All right, so you were talking about Xbox Live music mm-hmm. on the iPhone and not getting all the features. Recently, Ballmer just said that he pretty much all but confirmed that there will be Microsoft Office on the iPad, but not before they change it to a touch UI and put it on a Windows device first. So let's talk about that strategy. What do you think? I mean, so he's in one way he's relenting and saying, okay, our flagship product that still rakes in lots and lots of money will be on somebody else's device. And we'll pretty it up and make it all touch-based. But before we do that, we're still going to put it on our device. And he didn't say how long it will take from being on a Surface tablet or something like that and how long it'll take to get onto the iPad. So it might be, you know, half a year, a year, whatever, I don't know. Maybe even shorter than that, though. But it basically sounds like he's trying to use that to convince people to buy Windows-based tablets. So what do you think of this strategy? Winning? Losing?
Wait, hold on. Maybe I misunderstood. So they're going to put it on an iPad eventually.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. But before it goes to an iPad, they're going to completely overhaul the UI to a touch UI. And put it on Windows, make it exclusive to Windows first, and then for some undisclosed time period, and then
I don't think you could not put it on other operating systems.
Yeah,
I mean you just have to. Like, that's just a huge amount of money, and I think that's the one thing that people miss going from Windows to OS X, is that they don't have Office anymore, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I mean, you can't not sell to them.
Well, but that's the whole point. That's the power, right?
At this point, I don't think too many people are like, "Oh, I'm not going to buy an iPad or an Apple computer because I can't get Office." Like, I think people are past that point.
I disagree. I think if OS X didn't have Office, I think it would have been harder for people to change. Like, there's no one. I there are some alternatives, but there's no one I know who does not have Office installed on their computer. And so, in my opinion, it's actually pretty powerful. It's a dangerous strategy to not do that, because you're right, there's a lot of missing money, and it's risky whether or not people will choose a platform on that. But Office has retained a significant amount of power. I mean, you know, there's WordPerfect's been there. iWork has always been there. But I don't think OpenOffice is there. None of them have really gone anywhere compared to Office. Office has been, and this is the thing I think could be scarier. I think they have a lot of power in Office, and I think people underestimate how much it has. I do think people would be more reluctant to switch to OS X if they didn't have Office. However, especially because, you know, when people, like, I'm in school right now, whenever you get a file, they always send it in .docx format. You know, they always send it XLSX. They're not doing it anything else. But the thing is, I wonder, to me, Office is one of those products that everybody thinks is good, but it's not great. And I feel like that's the same way people felt about Windows. It was ubiquity over, like, joy of using it. And when Apple came out with stuff, people changed because they genuinely wanted Apple products. They loved the MacBook or whatever, either because it was good or because of marketing, whatever it was. What I think is, if they decide, hey, we're going to just throw Mac users under the bus and we're just going to make it for Windows, if there's a space where somebody makes an innovative, a better word processing app, I think it could be very bad for Microsoft, because I think that's a huge product they have. And I just feel like, I don't feel like I know that many people who use Office, maybe Excel, but I feel like a lot of people aren't like, wow, I really love this product. It's more that this is what I use, this is what I've always used. Like, of course I'm going to use this. Like, what else would I use?
I like Office. Not being biased, but.
But what, there's nothing about it that I feel like, this is really great software. There are elements of it that are great, but there's still so many things about it that frustrate me, and I feel like, I mean, there's no other option anyway, so.
So, you know, I wouldn't say I'm quite a power user of Office. You know, I have to do some formulas and stuff in Excel, and concatenations, I've recently learned that, and some stuff like that, but VLOOKUP and all that. And Excel is pretty powerful. I do prefer that over Google Spreadsheet, with the exception of the Forms. So Google Forms is really, really powerful. I love that stuff. And you can hack it into whatever you want. You can actually make self-grading quizzes with Google Forms, which is amazing. And you can use it as registration, you can use it as surveys, all that stuff. They did implement a form tool in Office 365 or the Excel web app, but it's not quite there yet. So, you know, and same thing with Word. Like, obviously, Word, the way it handles formatting and all that stuff, much better than Google Docs. But the commenting sort of. And the collaboration, the real-time collaboration of Google Docs is way superior to what Word can do. I do like the version editing a little bit better in Microsoft Word, because it just seems like in Google it just throws everything at you in the versioning, and that's a little confusing. So you know it's I get what you're saying, Rob. Sorry, Sean. It's they're really close. I mean, or it's right there at the cusp where you could say if Google just did a couple more things, then it would be the tipping point and people would stop using Word. But I still think you'd have to have an attrition of a certain generation, because there's going to be that certain generation that they're just set in their ways and they're never going to change to Word, even from Word or Office, even if something is significantly better, just hands down better. A really, really crazy, I'll just throw this hand grenade out there and then we'll totally shift the subject. But somebody, I've put these pieces together on the internet, on the internets, a couple months ago, before the iPhone announcement, somebody like pointed out that there was this weird shipment of 17-watt power cords for Apple, and they don't have a product that uses 17-watt power cords. So like, so you throw that in there, and then you get this news of whenever you buy a new iOS device, you get iWorks for free now. Mm-hmm. They announced that with the launch of the iPhones, and then you throw in these rumors that they're making bigger touchscreen panels, and then you throw in the 64-bit A7 chip, and you might say that they are ready to make their own competitor to something like a Chromebook or something like a netbook, right? Like a $600 touchscreen laptop. That's for more productivity. That's a crazy like amalgamation of all these rumors. But with that said, iWorks just doesn't compare to the Office suite. It doesn't compare to Google Apps. It's very pretty, but it just can't compete on as far as productivity goes.
One quick thing I want to add. I actually, when I was saying that, I'm actually not terribly impressed with the Google Apps. I think collaboration, by far, they have it down, and which makes sense because they're great at web services, but I would definitely use Word over the Google Apps. I almost think of it almost like how Mailbox and Sparrow, these are small companies that just did mail really well. Mm-hmm. Things like that, other companies that just make specialized software that figure out how to do it better. But it's funny you say formatting does better, because I feel like everyone has the same problem in Word. If you have a table or a picture and you move it slightly, it changes the formatting of everything. So if you don't move it slightly, and it all changes. And then the other problem I have, and this confuses the hell out of me, is so if you have a numbered list and then you kind of change the formatting, like you add something else in between, and you try to continue your numbered list, all the time it forgets to continue it. It restarts it and you hit continue numbering and it doesn't read it. And what I find hilarious is that OneNote, which is Microsoft's product, I think does bulleting and numbering brilliantly. It's perfect.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't know your numbering, you just type, like if you're using four and then a period or a number and then a period, you just type the number and period and it just keeps going. Like it.
Yeah.
It's so much better. And Word formatting infuriates me. So
no, I guess I meant more like you're right. With pictures and layout, graphical layouts.
That's what publishers for.
Pages.
Yeah, works. I guess that's what publishers. But like, why?
Pages works amazingly well for just graphical layout. Like you just drag and drop, and the text realigns itself, and it's beautiful. But what I meant when I said layout was more like tables. This might be a quirk of my profession, but as a teacher, I used to make my own worksheets and tests a lot. And the way that you get the fill in the blank for the fill in the way I would do it without losing my formatting is with tables. So you can't do tables the same way in Google Docs, because I would put the whole context, the whole paragraph in a table, and then I'd have and make the table invisible except for the line.
Oh, okay.
And so that's, you know, it's definitely a very quirky, specific thing that I used to do. But, yeah, Google Docs does not let you get that very specific type of formatting. So, anyhow, Office, you know, I think I get what they're trying to do, what Ballmer's trying to do. I think it's a mistake. I don't think it's going to, you know, sync Windows, but I don't think it's going to earn them any love, and I don't think it's going to earn them a bunch of hardware sales either. So I think it's just that much more time for people to discover alternatives to Office. And, you know, but it's this weird paradox where Sean is right. Like, I have a Mac and I own a copy of Office. But I own a copy of Office because of work. Like, if I didn't work where I worked right now, I wouldn't own a copy of Office. I'd do everything in Google Docs. If I were still a teacher and I didn't have to fill out a bunch of forms and share and collaborate and have people add to the forms that I make and the flyers that I make and stuff like that, I would just use my own productivity suite, which would be Google Docs. Even with the fact that, you know, I just said that you can't really make good worksheets with Google Docs compared to Microsoft Word, I'd still use Google Docs because it's free and it's in the cloud and it does collaboration right. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. With that said, because of where I work, I definitely will get Office for the iPad when it comes out. So,
see how it works.
Want to stick on this Microsoft weirdness and talk about these, well, it's not really a Microsoft thing, but I guess Fox News has these giant tablets. Have you?
Yeah, they're massive.
So Fox News has, they're making a big deal about their renovated newsroom that is basically just a bunch of like 60-inch TV panels that are touch tablets. And so they have in the background, or I guess in the foreground, because the guy is walking around the newsroom.
Yeah.
And it's just really bizarre, because why have these big screens? Like, I don't think it does anything towards productivity. And I don't know the exact resolution, but somebody I saw online that the resolution is actually lower than an iPad resolution. Like, yeah, so like the iPad 2 resolution, right? So it's like it's just a really big with really big pixels, and you see it, like the guy's looking at Twitter and it takes up his entire screen. It's like 50 inches of Twitter. Like, really?
Imagine trying to get notified.
That means a letter is this big, you know? It's like 2 inches big.
So there's a picture. I mean, the tablets themselves are like pretty much as big as the people using them. Which is kind of hilarious. And like you said, I mean, the tweets are like the size of your arm.
Yeah, look at that.
Well, you know what's funny, too, now that I think about it, because OS X and Windows 7 aren't like this, but in Windows 8, we should mention, so they're all Windows 8 tablets.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting. But Windows 8, a main function is closing apps by dragging from the top down. So, I mean, you're not going to do it on a...
Yeah, you're like, so you're dragging down.
You have like a stick that you bring up there.
It's like you don't have to go to the gym because it's like an entire workout, like just trying to move around everything on the screen.
And it's actually funny. So Jon Stewart was making fun of it, and he actually called them big iPads. And I was like, actually, they're all Windows 8.
They're giant surfaces.
Yeah. Well, I also thought it's
actually they're the original. They're like pretty much the size of the original.
Yeah, the original. Yeah. I can't imagine if they pulled up the virtual keyboard how big that
would be. They'd have to like literally just be playing.
So
it's like that scene in Big where they're playing the walk-on
piano. So on a more serious note, this is the funny thing. Like, we make fun of Fox, and this is the new news thing. CNN has done this for a while. It's this, they want to find ways to integrate technology, but they don't know how. So they do all these overly technological things. Like, they made fun of this so much, and it's just still hilarious to me. CNN, during the presidential election, they had a hologram. First of all, it was a hologram. Like, it was a hologram of, and it was Will.i.am. Like, standing around thinking, the presidential election's going on, I want to know what Will I Am thinks.
In hologram.
In hologram.
Hologram Will I Am.
So, like all these, and there's this whole push towards giant screens. CNN has done this where they'll have these giant screens, and they can manipulate it a lot, and it'll be touch screens. A lot of ESPN does this a lot. I guess ESPN, at least a little, there's a little more utility to it because they, when they're talking about plays, they can circle players and stuff like that and say where they're
going.
That's
cool, yeah.
So it's a little bit more useful. But this whole integration of technology, no one's really gripped it. But I wonder, though, I wonder if average users like it. Like, they like seeing tweets, and as dumb as it is, like seeing giant things happening. I don't know. I wonder if it's been...
Well, so I guess the thing that makes me crazy is, like, if you guys don't know, if the audience doesn't know, this is my job. Like, I teach integration of technology. Granted, I do it in an educational field, but I teach people how to integrate technology, and this is like an oil-water integration, right? And here's why. Because, you know, I was harping on the resolution of the screen. Not so much like, oh, they paid a lot of money for bad technology. I don't really care. But the fact that it has low pixel count means that I can actually get more information on a 15-inch Retina display iPad, MacBook Pro, right? Like, I can get more information on that 15-inch screen than they can get on that 55-inch screen, right? So then you say, well, why do they want that big screen? Do they want the audience to see what's on their screen? Well, if that's the case, then you should just patch in the video feed directly instead of walking to some guy and having the camera try to get a shot of the guy talking to the other guy and look at his computer screen at the same time, because they're not going to be able to see the information clearly. It's going to be glare, and it's going to be at a weird angle. So it's just like this broken concept of, oh, we like to see people working.
That's what we'll give them.
So it's just completely production. It's not productivity. It's production.
Right. I mean, there's
and
just
it's
like,
so stupid.
It's just like trying to bring a level of action and excitement into.
We're checking Twitter, so you don't have to.
Yeah.
Literally, like I watched the little promo video. And that's basically the.
But no, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's like they've been doing this for a while in different news shows where you see people off in the background who are just working on computers. And it's like, well, why do I want to see them working? But it's that same concept, except, you know, they have just giant screens. And since they have to, since they literally have to, like, get up and reach across the screen in order to get to something, it looks like things are happening and people are like, oh, let me just pull this tweet down. And they're like, you know, all the way up here trying to pull it.
No, oh, man. If you viewers at home want to understand what this experience is like, if you can go into your living room or wherever you play some TV and just walk up to it,
don't touch it, though.
Right,
don't smudge it.
And then that is their experience. I 100% agree. I think it's for show. I don't think there's any productivities. I mean, literally, like I said, it's like standing next to your TV. It's more difficult.
You know, what's interesting, though, is like all the stuff on there were custom apps, though. Did you notice that?
Oh, were they? I didn't really...
Well, like, the Twitter app was not the Twitter app that I use. And
it's just probably a skin or something, or... Yeah,
they should.
Honestly,
like,
you know what's funny? It was like, probably just... It was probably just videos that they made that just replay on the screen.
No, you know, that actually makes sense because it, just like on ESPN, I'm sure they have to have custom apps to do the things that they do.
That's pretty cool, though, that they have custom apps. They actually, I don't know, it looked pretty slick, like the brief clips
of the
apps. I'm just saying, it was pretty cool. But it's ridiculous, don't get me wrong. But I'm saying the apps that they're using look pretty slick compared to the ones I use.
Yeah.
The one thing that I saw their use of it was that they showed a guy and he was actively researching the topic or like something about tweets or something as Shep Smith was hosting the show. And he walked over to the guy. He's like, any updates on there? He's like, well, the last update is this. And he like points to the...
yeah. Can I just say how ridiculous it is that they're using Twitter as like that's their news feed on Fox News, like on a real news network.
Well, other journalists are saying this.
Yeah,
it's just funny that that's where we are today, though.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
what else?
Yeah.
What else? Do we have anything else? We have like 2 minutes left.
2 minutes. What can we do in 2 minutes? Fitbit Force, really quickly. Fitbit Force versus Samsung Gear. So we won't get into all the details, but Samsung Gear, we know it came out last week. It works only with Samsung phones that are running Android 4.3, which is just the Samsung, what's the big tablet one?
The Note 3. PS4.
Well, it's just the Note 3 right now, because that's the only one running 4.3. They're saying the Galaxy S4 will eventually run 4.3, but right now it's just the Note. So that came out, and it's been reviewed. And before the show, Sean and I were saying we've read a couple reviews on this. Actually, I've read, I think, 4 reviews. And some sites, basically, overall, I don't think anybody loved it. They said it doesn't do much overall. It's a little bit slow. But it's $299.
Yeah, you have to have a $300 phone in addition to that.
Yeah, yeah. No,
I guess you're going to have to have a smartphone. You're going to have a smartphone for any of these.
If I felt like it was a quality smartphone that did what I wanted it to and not extra stuff that I don't really care about, I'd pay $299. I'd pay the $300. Like if it knocked it out of the park with the features that I wanted that mattered to me, I'd pay the $300. But it's far from that. So most people said overall, kind of slow, kind of sluggish. The apps are a little busted. They said some of the stuff was cool, like you could talk into your hand, and other people said that's stupid. What's the point?
I guess it just looks cool because you can be like CIA.
It's a James Bond watch. Let's be honest. Yeah. You got the creepy like James Bond camera coming out of the side of it, and like
yeah, you talk. So and there was I guess diametric views on the camera, right? Like some people said, oh, it was really cool to have this camera. It's much better than I thought it would be. And other people are like, it's a 1.2 megapixel camera that has a really small sensor and it can't do stuff indoors. So anyhow, that's the Samsung Gear. Mixed reviews at best. $299. The Fitbit Force just came out. And it's an extension of the Fitbit Flex, which came out just about this time last year. Maybe not quite a year ago, actually. And so the Fitbit Force does everything the Fitbit 1 can do. So it tracks, it's got a pedometer in there, an altimeter, which measures stairs that you climb. It's your altitude. It can measure your motion during sleep. And from that, they have an algorithm that's supposed to tell you how much restful sleep you got.
Which I think that's cool.
And actually, that's the thing I'm most interested in because...
Yeah.
I sleep terribly, so I'd like to start measuring that and doing experiments with what helps me sleep better. But anyhow, so it's got, like I said, everything from the Fitbit One, which is pretty well-reviewed product. The Fitbit One, I think, is about $100, and the Fitbit Force is $129. It fits on your wrist, and it has...
It looks pretty good, too. I
mean, yeah, so slick. The thing that it has that the Fitbit Flex that came out last year doesn't have is a display. So it actually has a display. With that display, it has a small OLED display that I think is just blue text, and like this bright white blue text. And so with that, it's actually a watch. So
well, I like the related videos here.
Notepad right there. So with that, I mean, like it's $129 versus $299 for the Gear, which has a lot more features, obviously. But in my sense, I kind of feel like the Fitbit Force is a smart enough watch until I get the real smartwatch that I want.
So it doesn't do text messaging, email, call notifications,
right? Actually, right now, so they're claiming that it's not going to be out at launch, but they said that on the iPhone, they're going to make it work so that through Bluetooth 4.0, LE, they're going to use the caller ID. So you'll get caller ID on the phone. Mm. It'll tell you, if you have the contact, it'll tell you who's calling, the name, and if you don't have the contact, it'll show you the phone number. And potentially you could bake that into probably get that into text notifications, stuff like that. But
honestly,
they haven't made any claims on that yet.
That's pretty tempting. $130 is not too expensive.
Yeah.
It'd be hard for me to buy something like this without having that SMS notifications.
Windows Phone?
Oh yeah, that too.
No, right now it's only. So right now that caller ID is iPhone only, and
Well, I guess I'm not giving you the iPhone back.
There's a good chance. chance that they'll bring it to Android eventually. Yeah. But it won't, you know, it's going to be fragmented because it's got to be Bluetooth 4.0. And even on iPhone, it would be iPhone 5 and higher because 4S doesn't have 4.0.
Guess I'm out of luck.
Quick question to you guys. I guess you can finish up. Do you think you'll buy a Fitbit Force or a Gear? Either of you guys?
It's not an impulse buy at 130, but I'm thinking about it.
Honestly, looks wise, yes. If the screen was a little bit bigger and showed SMS, yes, I would definitely get it. Well, that and if it worked with a Windows phone. And I mean, neither of these. I would definitely not get the Gear. I think it's way too expensive. I don't think it looks that great. I think the camera on it's ridiculous, and it's a very limited number of phones that you can actually use it with. So.
Well, yeah. Sorry.
So can you use Cyanogenmod?
Cyanogenmod
to update your phone to be able to use the Gear with it, or no?
Well, I don't know how it works. Like, I have 4.3 on my phone. I don't know if it's you just have to have 4.3 or you have to have TouchWiz. That's the 4.3.
I'm pretty sure it's got to be the Samsung proprietary.
I'm sure people at XDA have hacked it by now. They're so quick with stuff. But it's not a good solution. Like, yeah, you could do it, but why should you have to root and unlock your phone to get that support? But my question is, do you think it will sell? Because I think, just one quick thing, this actually, maybe we can have a larger conversation about it some other week, but Rob had a lot of complaints. He immediately said how stupid he felt a lot of things are. But I think Samsung has been the king of, we think your product is stupid, and it is going to sell stupidly well.
Like, we didn't even talk about the Curve phone either.
Yeah, the Curve. I mean, we'll talk about that maybe next week. But
yeah, when that actually comes out.
I mean, that's keep in mind, also, the watch has that faux leather thing, too, going on. So, yes, it's stupid. Do you think it'll sell well?
I think it's too expensive. Too expensive, and it's too limited with the phones that it can be.
Globally, I don't think it'll sell well. It might sell well in Korea, where Samsung is headquartered. It's going to be a niche product in the U.S., but I don't think because I think their execution on this is more of a fanboy device. You know, like people who are really excited about their ecosystem might buy it,
but
it's not a mainstream device. So there's a lot of people who have Samsung as a mainstream product, and it's not even their flagship stuff, like the Samsung Galaxy. It's just like a regular Samsung. And that's the thing that we have to be clear on, is like Samsung sells a lot of phones, but they don't have like one line that's anywhere near what iPhone sells, you know? Because, you know, iPhone has very few product lines, right? Like you could say the 4S, the 5, the 5C, 5S now. And so the Samsung Galaxy doesn't sell anywhere near what the 5 sells.
Well, for phones, Samsung probably only has 3, the Note, the S4, and then the Mini.
They have a lot of like low-range just Android phones that you can get for free on contract and that.
Well, I'll put it this way. I do kind of think people see Samsung a certain way, and they associate the Galaxy S4 and the Note with Samsung. You're right. They probably do have lower end like free phones, but I actually don't think people look at those phones and think of.
But when they're reporting their numbers, they're talking about how much money they've made, and it's on all their products. It's not just the Galaxy S4 sold this many compared to the iPhone or something like that.
I mean, I will say, I mean, definitely the iPhone is clearly higher, and the iPhone, let's be honest, it's like a ridiculous outlier. But the S4 sells really well, even just on...
No. I'll say.
Actually, let's see. I would say that the whole sticking to Samsung, I think it's a problem that it's only working with the Note right now, but I think once they get the S4 and S3 updated, I don't think that's actually that big of a deal, because I think a lot of people they're trying to pull an Apple right now, because Apple, you know, they don't have to cater to anyone else because they have a big enough thing. So they're trying to pull an Apple, and it's scary because I don't want to start this. This goes into a different debate about Android and how it's turning into, you know, Samsung Android. But they're getting more and more where it really is a Samsung world in terms of Android, because I think a lot of people have it. Let's see. Let me just see one quick thing. It says that so Galaxy S4, they had 20 million units in 60 days.
That's better than I thought.
iPhone 5 got to 20 million in 25 days. So they got to it in less than half the time. For sure. But, I mean, we'll push it off to a different day.
That's a little different, though.
What?
I don't think you can just compare that.
Well, I don't mean to, like, stack the phones up one-to-one. I'm just saying that when people talk about Samsung is killing it, they're talking about their product line is killing it, and their product line is more diverse than Apple. You could say that's a good thing, actually. I'm just saying, like, Apple, as far as their smartphones go, they have effectively one smartphone, and they're killing it with one smartphone.
Does anything else sell, though? Like, clearly the S4 sells. Clearly the Note sells. But I don't know. Do the tabs sell at all? Does the 10.1, do those actually sell?
That's the thing, is they just make everything, and some of it sells.
But that's what I wonder. Like, do they actually sell? Like, do they actually get good sales numbers, or is really the most... I mean, I guess we'd have to look into it. I guess that's for next week.
They also sell computers and washing machines, so...
Yeah.
Really nice washing machines, but...
Okay, well, we'll see in the coming weeks whether or not it actually sells. And I think the one thing to know I've said about Samsung, I really, in many ways, don't like Samsung, but they've found ways to prove everybody wrong by somehow still selling ridiculous numbers. And that's why I'm hesitant to really knock them for this. And it's sad because HTC is the opposite. They're doing way worse, and they put out arguably their best phone they've ever made. And but it's now the cookie crumbles.
Yeah. Oh, so God, I think we got it.
On that note, that'll do it for this week's episode of The Unwind. Join us next week on Thursday nights at around 8 o'clock, and we will talk more tech and video games. And as always, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
And I need more grandma upgrades for cooking.
I'm turning this off.